Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. As usual, blessed and joyous to be joined by all of you. Now, I am traveling with Deacon Harold Burke's service. We're still touring across the United States of America. And this time, we find ourselves in Ohio. We are specifically near Cincinnati today, in Mason, Ohio. And we are on a tour to evangelize the United States of America. And many people and parties and parishes are already reaching out, seeking out for the both of us to come to your parish. And we still have room available for future missions. So if you're interested, events@deaconherald.com and events@drmarcuspeter.com. And our agent will be happy to coordinate a mission for your parish. We're able to do this with little to no cost to parishes. And it's just the joy of being able to bring the gospel to people face to face. Now, I want to begin this hour by talking with my friend, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. There's a particular bit of news that we will address in a bit, and this has to do with an investor in Germany offering families 500 euros for every child they have baptized. You heard that right. It's a little bizarre, and it actually does raise a few canonical questions as well. But Matthew will be able to shed more light on this, both in terms of reason, but also in terms of practical prudence. But one of the things I want us to pay attention to as well is, amidst the tensions, especially between the United States and Cuba, a candidate for sainthood has arisen, and thank the Lord for it, because we now have Venerable Felix Varela. He's a Cuban-born candidate for Catholic sainthood. He embodied then, as now, the virtues needed for Cuba's pursuit of freedom and reconciliation with the United States, and most of all, for Cuba's hopeful return to Christ. And so, Dr. Matthew Bunsen is going to join us to talk about all of this. Now, over and above that, we are also going to be addressing a few things that are happening in the Leonine papacy. And I want to highlight this, Matthew and I are going to highlight this as well, that Pope Leo XIV has demonstrated himself to be a careful, prudent pope. He is no Benedict, no John Paul II, he is no Francis, he is Leo XIV. So rather than measure him up by the popes of the past, let us be grateful for the pope we have been given. And finally, for the remainder of the hour, we will talk with Doug Berry. A new report from the Institute of Family Studies finds that more than half of young men in the U.S. feel lonely or isolated. 4 in 10 report feeling like failures. Doug is going to join us to talk about this. For now, the headlines.
Thank you, Marcus, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for August 6th. It's the Feast of the Transfiguration. And today's news is brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need at visitingangels.com. Iran says the U.S. is ready to return to commitments, but denies that talks have been taking place. Iran's deputy foreign minister made the comments Wednesday without much explanation. President Trump claims talks have been happening, whether Iran wants to admit it or not. He also said that a deal was close. A Senate committee has voted to hold Dr. Anthony Fauci in contempt of Congress. The vote comes after the former White House health advisor invoked the Fifth Amendment more than 100 times in a hearing about the COVID-19 pandemic last week. The Department of Justice can now move to consider charging Fauci with a crime. Dr. Erica Swartz is the next director of the CDC. Swartz, a former Deputy Surgeon General and Coast Guard health official, is the first Senate-confirmed CDC director in nearly a year. She was confirmed by a vote of 51-44 that was mostly among party lines. And California lawmakers are looking to end child marriage in the state. A proposed bill would set the minimum marriage age at 18 with no exceptions. Right now, California allows minors to marry with parental permission. It's also one of the only 3 states that has no minimum age for marriage. From the AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Dan McGraw.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Fina, joined by Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President, Editorial Director of EWTN News, talking about church news today and current events in light of church teaching. Matthew, my friend, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's good to talk with you.
It's always good to reconnect with you. So I want to begin with a bit of happy news, just so that we can set ourselves on the right foot. Tell us about the candidate for sainthood coming out of Cuba.
Well, yeah, I mean, the person you're talking about is Felix Varela, who was a priest born in Cuba, but served for quite some time in the United States, in New York in particular. And he was dedicated when he was serving in New York to the large immigrant population that was beginning to flow into certainly the Eastern Seaboard, New York area in particular, especially the Irish. And one of the geniuses of Father Varela was that he actually learned Gaelic in order to be able to preach and hear confessions and say Mass, you know, as appropriate. Latin, obviously, but to be able to communicate properly with the Irish immigrants. In his time in Cuba, he had served in the Spanish Parliament. He had been also, he represented Cuba in the Spanish Parliament in Madrid, which was the Cortes Generales, and was a spokesperson for the independence of Cuba, and was also very active in pushing for the abolition of slavery. So this is one of those people that most people had never heard of him in his own lifetime, and certainly today. And yet, as we get to know him, we can appreciate even more and more just how extraordinary a person he was.
Can we also highlight how one of the great crises that we're seeing in Cuba right now is reason that's been untethered from an objective sense of truth and morality? And so Father Varela here would be a massive representation of what a reclamation can look like.
Well, that's right. So his profile has really been growing pretty significantly in the last 5-6 years. I've certainly heard of him a lot more. And it was the classic case where he returned as his health was fading in the early 1850s. He went to St. Augustine. He died there, but then his remains were transferred, were moved to Cuba. And he's actually buried at the University of Havana. And so he is a kind of bridge figure. But in a way, I think that the Cuban government probably wouldn't necessarily appreciate, but the people of Cuba would, in that here is somebody who he bridged the life of Cuba with the life of the United States. But what are the great golden threads that pull all of that together? The first is the idea of having a free and independent Cuba. And Cuba is anything but free. It is obviously and has been for decades under the dictatorial Marxist atheist cruel government of what had begun under Fidel Castro and continues now. He wanted to end slavery. Well, the Cuban people themselves have been in a form of slavery, not exactly the type that Varela was trying to end, but the slavery of the human heart, the human person. But then he was also somebody who understood profoundly what it means to have those relationships, a democratic system that really can uphold the dignity of the human person. So I think from that standpoint, spiritually speaking, he is a potentially profound figure.
And one so needed, so pivotally needed in what's going on amid U.S.-Cuba tensions.
That's right. And so he's somebody I think that we can all ask for his help. Mm-hmm. You know, his cause was opened, and he was declared venerable, I think, in 2012 under Pope Benedict XVI. And that was certainly great news. So the next stage, obviously, is a certification of a miracle. And certainly we're all praying that that might actually happen. But the other thing, too, is that we can look back, as I was saying, on a figure like Felix Ferreira as somebody who was patient, who understood and embraced the complexity of life. I mean, imagine going from Cuba to serving in Madrid, then to serving pastorally in what was the melting pot of New York in the 1840s and early 1850s. I mean, this was a very complicated situation. So he understood also what it meant to suffer. And from that standpoint, too, I think he's a great role model for us in patient perseverance of love and care.
To pivot from such a stalwart figure of reason and faith to an exercise of faith probably a little devoid of reason. A wealthy Catholic investor in Munich, 500 euros for every baptism. Matthew, this reeks of simony to me.
Certainly there are obvious concerns about that. So people are understanding, and your listeners are understanding what exactly we're talking about. His name is Peter Löw. He is an investor and an active Catholic. He has announced that he has set aside 20,000 euros for what is called in German Starnberger Schützengelken, which is basically translates into the guardian angel, a little guardian angel of Starnberg, Schützengelken being what it is. That's important because you heard the name Starnberger or Starnberg. This is an initiative that is based in Starnberg. So, in other words, this Peter Löw is based there as well. So, it's in a region, it's a lakeside region, some miles outside of Munich. And it is considered to be one of the most prosperous and, not to mention, expensive regions. And the argument is that there are costs involved in having your child baptized. Now, obviously, that raises immediate questions about what do you mean by there are costs involved, because obviously no one is going to pay, or you shouldn't be paying, as you say, simony. But the argument is that there are people feel disincentivized because there are actually some costs involved in the ceremony and all of the surrounding things. So what he's trying to do, and one can question that certainly there are good intentions here, that this is what he sees certainly as an expression of charity, but a lot of people find this very unsettling and highly inappropriate. But he sees this probably from his standpoint as some small way of trying to get people to baptize their children at a time when Germany is seeing a massive bleed out of Catholics. And I think some would interpret this that stunts like this, initiatives like this, continue to sort of debase the currency of solid Catholic teaching and might end up actually contributing to the flight of people from the church rather than helping to increase it. And again, we're only talking about what would be a small number of Catholics who would qualify to receive this money anyway. So I fear that the scandal and confusion it might cause may actually eclipse whatever good he might be trying to do.
And therein lies the issue. Now, the Diocese of Bavaria has very honestly addressed this very charitably. They said this is a likable expression of charity. So they've been handling it very well, because they also said there's an uneasy feeling here, because monetary transaction and the dispensing of the sacraments seem to be very close together if this were to be approved.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not a particularly great analogy or parallel, but we see, for example, in parts of Africa where using money from places like Saudi Arabia and elsewhere, people are buying brides from Christians and marrying them to have a Muslim. I'm not saying it's exactly like this, but once you start seeing money involved, people are, as you say, they feel pretty uneasy.
Yeah. My guest is Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President, Editorial Director of EWTN News. We're going to continue on the other side of the break talking about church news. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you feel as though life is flying past you? Are you desperate for a way to find moments of peace and quiet? Lord, Teach Me to Pray, the free Ignatian Prayer Series, will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord, Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord, Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
This program is brought to you in part by Dave Tyson with Real Estate for Life, a faith-based organization, and Texana Bank, offering residential mortgage assistance across all 50 states, including purchases and refinances with conventional FHA and VA loans. More information can be found at re4l.org. Again, that's re4l.org.
All loans subject to credit approval. Texana Bank, NMLS 407536. Equal housing lender. Member FDIC.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Welcome back. I'm Marcus Speed. I'm talking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. We're talking about church news right now. Matthew, let's shift gears a little bit to a statement that recently came out of the Spanish Bishop's President's office about the invasion of Ceuta and what's going on there.
We all were watching with obvious great alarm what looked like the phrase has been used that there was a kind of invasion. And it was obviously disputed by those who would argue, well, no, this is simply a large movement of migrants illegally. Invasion, some would say, is inflammatory. And yet, here we have the president of the Spanish Episcopal Conference, Archbishop Luis Arguello, who used that. He said that the invasion of Ceuta is a test, that demography is a weapon. And he said that the massive movement or entry of illegal migrants into the Spanish city, now let's remember, there was some initial confusion because people aren't necessarily geographically inclined or well-informed. Ceuta is actually on the African coast, so it is like a Spanish enclave. It is officially part of Spain, but it exists not in Spain, obviously, but in actual Africa, nestled right along the edge of Morocco along the sea. And it's a beautiful part of North Africa, but it is part of Spain. So suddenly they woke up and tens of thousands, perhaps 60,000 people, the vast, vast majority of whom were men, roughly between the ages of 15 and 30, so you can picture, we've certainly all seen the video, stormed basically the Spanish city of Ceuta. And so the Archbishop is saying that the question now is that this was an invasion, that it is a test of how Europe and how Spain is going to respond. And he said on X that biopolitics is key to current global power. Life is toyed with, and people, their dreams, hunger, sexuality, and data are exploited for the sake of profit and power. And he said migration is part of this strategy. So I think he's, in some ways, used that phrase, he's saying the quiet part out loud.
And the president is not the only person making the statement. Other bishops are also saying that we're not facing an ordinary migration crisis. Could you please comment on, we're seeing mass migration, illegal migration, and therefore migratory issues in the traditional historical West. But why is this particular issue so alarming?
Well, I think part of it is that, and this is obviously a much broader conversation as it relates in particular, I think, to Western Europe, that there was a decision made. We can track the numbers of migrants entering into Europe, Western Europe. We can start with around 2011 or so when the Syrian civil war exploded as it did, forcing hundreds of thousands, if not several million individuals to flee Syria into neighboring countries, and they just kept going. And they were given very warm welcome in Western Europe. That flood has only continued. It ties very closely with the reality of global mass migration, that at any given moment, literally tens of millions of men, women, and children are on the move, caused by political unrest, economic unrest, by various disasters. And that flood has found its way very persistently and almost nonstop into Europe. The results are that we now have millions of illegal migrants in Western Europe, joining the millions of others who have been welcomed in over the last 50 years or so through a form of very liberal migration policies. And it has reached a point now where there is the inevitable. Some would be concerned that it's too late to worry about this or to solve this. But the inevitable response on the part of most of the population that also feels very powerless, because these policies simply are not changing, and this flood of migration continues, from their view, at the great risk of cultural identity, of language, and now also of religion. And so this invasion of Ceuta has become, I think, a real crisis point, and the event, I think, that has sparked the inevitable, in some ways understandable, but ominous response across Western Europe.
Yeah, and if I may invite, I know that both of us strive very hard to not venture into speculation, but I think there's some reasonable threshold here. Is there a particular socialist agenda being pushed here in the overt influx of these illegal immigrants, and what is the intention of the socialist regime thereof?
Well, I think when you look at Spain, which ironically has a government that is not really it's in power, but is politically so damaged, and yet no matter how bad the situation there becomes politically, the government of Sanchez continues to remain in power because of the peculiar nature of Spanish politics, but also in many ways of the multi-party system that exists across much of Western Europe. And that particular government, the current Spanish government, chose basically through fiat to recognize and give the right to vote to at least 500,000 migrants. So it is seen as a political gambit that all of these new arrivees are going to support the socialist government. And obviously, there are lessons there for the rest of the West, for West of Europe, and some would argue, even here in the United States, that that sort of amnesty and then the right to vote is designed tacitly to broaden the voter rolls for one particular party, because I think we can safely say that the right-wing parties or the conservative parties are not in favor of this mass migration. They want stronger border, they want deportations, and they're certainly not inclined in any way to grant amnesty to those who might be in a country illegally.
To switch gears to other chaotic concerns that are closer to home, more cases of vandalism of Catholic property here in the United States.
Yeah, this is obviously something that we're seeing a great deal of across the United States. In Canada, of course, we've seen the mass arson and burning the churches and attacks on churches, partly in response to what has proven to be a completely unproven claims of burial grounds in the various Native American communities that were run by the church. We're seeing a large number of vandalisms occurring across the United States. The most recent is that there's a parish in New York in the Diocese of Brooklyn that has suffered another incident of vandalism. That this is the fourth, just in 2 years, in which a man violently destroyed a statue of the Blessed Mother. This is at St. Rita Roman Catholic Church in Long Island in Queens. And it's right there on video. A man jumped a fence, smashed the statue of the Blessed Mother with a hammer, and obviously the statue was knocked off its pedestal. This is something we have to be aware of and just be cognizant of the fact that the number of attacks in the U.S. across Europe is only increasing with each year. And so, I mean, just the sheer number of attacks now numbers in the hundreds across the United States.
And so not only do we have a lot to pray for, we also have to be aware that Catholics are being targeted in what is definitionally what can be called a hate crime. Matthew, time always flies. Thank you so much for your time and your wisdom.
Great to be with you. God bless.
My guest has been Dr. Matthew Bunsen, and as Matthew has been shedding light on these issues for us in terms of church news, the reality is that things are not all peachy in the Catholic world, and yet we have so much hope because Christ is in control. So let's keep fasting and praying. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
This Ave Maria program brought to you in part by the following nonprofit.
One of the greatest threats to your family isn't a disaster or a virus, but addiction. In nearly every family and every pew, someone is silently struggling. Beginning July 11th, Shalom World TV and the iThirst Initiative present Unshackled, a powerful new series on the Catholic Church's response to the addiction crisis, bringing together leading voices to discuss real healing. Stream it free at shalomworld.org or on the Shalom World app today.
Ever get asked one of those tough questions, like, do Catholics worship Mary? And in that moment, you freeze? Truthfully, the Catholic AI app gives you answers in seconds rooted in scripture, tradition, and the magisterium. Whether you're navigating a tough conversation, deepening your faith, or looking for daily spiritual guidance, Truthfully helps you know, live, and defend the Catholic faith. Truthfully can be found in the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Truthfully, Truthly.
What responsibility does social media bear in promoting the truth? The Catholic Catechism notes that in our modern society, the communications media plays a major role in societal information, cultural promotion, and formation. Since society has a right to information that is based on truth, justice, freedom, and solidarity, every segment of the communications culture bears a heavy responsibility for the common good. Media content within the bounds of justice and charity must be true and complete and communicated honestly and properly. The Catechism cautions us to be vigilant rather than passive consumers of information in order to resist unwholesome influences. Journalists are urged to respect the facts while still observing charity by not stooping to defamation of individuals. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John, chapter 8, verse 51. Jesus is in a discussion with some of the leaders of the Jews. They're talking about Abraham. Abraham lived 1,500 years before the time of Jesus. So in the course of the discussion, Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." He says that often in the Gospels. "He who keeps my word or believes in me will never die." To which the Jews say, "Now we know you have a demon." And they say, "Abraham died, as did the prophets. All the patriarchs, the great men and women of the history of Israel. All these people died, and you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death? Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died? And the prophets, who died?" And Jesus says, "Your father Abraham rejoiced that he was to see my day. He saw it and was glad." To which the Jews say, "You are not yet 50 years old, and you've seen Abraham?" And Jesus answers, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am."
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. A new report from the Institute of Family Studies finds that more than half of young men in the U.S. feel lonely or isolated. 4 in 10 report feeling like failures. Doug Berry joins us with how we can rightly think about this issue and therefore how we can help. Doug is a devoted husband and father of 5 children, host of 2 popular series on EWTN television, Life on the Rock and Battle Ready. He's also the author of First Line of Defense, The Catholic Man's Call to Heroism. And he's currently a co-host of the podcast U.S. Grace Force. For over 30 years, he's traveled both nationally and internationally to speak about and defend the Catholic faith and virtuous manhood. Doug, it's great to speak with you again. How are you?
Good, Dr. Marcus. Good to have the opportunity to be with you again.
Well, I greatly enjoyed our exchange the last time, and I'm very glad to reconnect with you this time. More than four in ten young men that were surveyed state, "I'm inclined to think that I am a failure," and report feeling lonely or isolated. In some ways, this isn't surprising, but it certainly is jarring.
It is, and it's also very concerning because, you know, we're talking about an age group. It was 18 to 29 that they looked at, about 2,000 guys. And these are our future fathers, husbands, you know, business owners, our workers of the world, of society. And that interior side that's hurting in that way, to feel like a failure, you know, we both know, and many of your audience know, this is one of the greatest attacks of the enemy. The devil tries to tear us down and discourage us and make us feel like we are failures, like we do not have a place, like we are not loved. And so many of the pieces of that study point that out. They feel the lack of friendship, the lack of community, the lack of being loved in many cases. So that idea of feeling like a failure is a first step towards really, you could say, neutering a man in the sense of, you know, where's the potential, where's the passion, where's the talent? Most importantly, what is God calling these men, calling any of us to do and to be, and how that interior disposition of discouragement can really undermine any of the efforts that we are called to take to try to find, you know, the path that God wants us to take in this world.
The question here, Doug, is also, what does it mean to be a man? I believe for so many of these young men, the cultural structure that used to help us decide from a social perspective, let alone a biblical perspective, of what manhood and womanhood meant is gone. And we can't presume that culture will help our sons discover that.
I could not agree more. We are seeing so many changes, have seen so many changes in the last several decades of our societies in various ways that have really torn apart these structures. You know, we talk about this in the book that Daniel O'Connor and I wrote, First Line of Defense. In the very beginning, the first chapter, The Quality of Courage, is that there was something that was in men years ago. And one of the examples we use in the book is 1941, December 7th, when Pearl Harbor happened. The next day, December 8th, recruiting stations across the country had men coming out the doors, down the sidewalks, into the streets. These were men who recognized a need. They understood their structure, that society needed good men to stand tall against an attack. And whenever you have a threat against an innocent or a value that is good, holy, and true, men need to step up and engage and get in that gap. And you saw this years ago. It used to be in the blood of most men. Not all. There's always been, you know, the Judas in the crowd, so to speak. But most men had that. And it was a structure that men passed on. Fathers would look at their sons and say, this is what you do. You roll up your sleeves and you get in there. You be a disciplined man, you be a good man, and you get the job done. If you're pinned down on a beach taking gunfire, for example, you figure out a way to get off that beach. You have to figure these things out and move forward. And you're absolutely right. The structure is so torn apart now. And that's one of the reasons for the book, is we wanted to help men and women to understand men, but help men understand this call to heroism is really, it's intricate in all of us men. We're really designed for it. You know, in the beginning of the book, I wrote a letter in there to my sons, and it could be written from fathers to sons across the world, about when I was a young man, I dreamed of slaying dragons and saving worlds. And I've counted my battles over the years. And now that I'm an older man, and the idea is when we get much, much older, we may be older, but interiorly, we still have that. It's still in there. It's supposed to be. But as you've said, the structure is so torn apart. It doesn't surprise me that these men in this study are feeling the way they are. But there is hope, and we can do something about it. But we've got to work from different angles on it, because there isn't just one problem here, there, and there's not just one solution.
You know, that language from Henry V, Shakespeare, once more into the breach, dear friends, once more. There's not a single boy on the planet that doesn't want to hear those words from his father. He wants to be exhorted to battle, but he also wants to be taught how to fight, what the fight looks like, and how am I supposed to respond in this fight. And so it's incumbent upon you and I, and your book really talks about this, it's incumbent upon you and I to call out the warrior in our sons.
Yeah, 100%. And this is something that we have seen, this emasculation that has taken place, this feminization that has happened to men in many respects, you know, as St. Thomas Aquinas talks about, you know, taking the easier path rather than the more arduous, more difficult, challenging one. That doesn't mean you don't work smarter, not harder. Of course, it's good to work smarter, not harder, but there still must be that interior and that exterior that says, I need to be physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually prepared for the difficult challenges. And you're right, fathers, traditionally, that was where you saw this being passed on. And we've lost a lot of that. Men today, their sons are trying to stand on their shoulders, you know, so to speak, and many men just don't know necessarily what to do to help them with that. I see this in Catholic men in traveling around the country, speaking at conferences or men's events or even family events everywhere for years, where you see that look in men's eyes, and even when they'll come up and talk to you about it, they will scratch their head basically saying, I'm not sure what to do to help my sons, to call them up to that battle in whatever way they're called to engage in it. And so there does need to be this formation, this training, which is, you know, obviously the famous scripture verse where iron sharpens iron, as one man sharpens another. We do need to be, as men, that sharpening tool to help in a good way, positive way, but with a challenge, raise each other up to be the men that God calls us to be, spiritually and naturally.
And to go back to that study, it's actually reported that they still have these honorable aspirations to be responsible men, to marry, to have children, to contribute to society. So in essence, Doug, we have a society that's trying to kill that from exteriorly to within their hearts.
Yeah, I think you find that also. You could make that comparison to women, where a lot of young ladies today have bought into the feminism that's out there. But interiorly, they do still have that maternal instinct. There's something inside that wants to bring life into the world, wants to be a nurturer, a mother, a wife, to care for the hearts and the minds and souls of others as a woman. And even though feminism has really, you know, really torn that apart, but you're right, when it comes to men, they're still in there. I can see this when I'm giving presentations and talks, and I'm looking at the faces of these guys, young and old alike, and you can see when you talk a certain way, they sit up differently. The look in their face changes. They almost hold their shoulders back a bit more and their chest out just a bit more, because there is something in them, as you've said, we want to be exhorted, called up to engage in a purposeful battle for what is good and holy and true. And that study, you're right, when, you know, reading through that and seeing that these guys still have that in them, Because it's intricate. It's built in from God. And God does call men to be protectors, defenders, providers, to be heads of families and of society, to be priests, heads of parishes and churches, and to do it in a very strong, godly, holy, masculine way. And so it's there. And you're right, the enemy knows if I just undermine that and discourage that, and then the men don't act upon those things with a sense of discipline and good ethics to create and nurture and develop naturally and spiritually those pieces, then we kind of sit and wallow in this trouble. You know, one of the numbers, the statistics that they pointed out was, I think it was 42% of these men use pornography daily or several times a day. That's another area that is a key place that is destroying and undermining us.
Yep. I'm talking with Doug Berry. Doug is a Catholic speaker, television host, author, and we're talking about this new study from the Institute of Family Studies that has proven that many young men today feel lonely, disconnected, and also identify as failures. We're going to continue on the other side of the break. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You want to pass the Catholic faith on to your children? A very good way is to teach your children at home. You want to protect your kids from the toxic culture that surrounds us? Do you want to have a greater influence in what your kids are learning? Once more, a great way is to teach your children at home. No teacher is going to care about your kids as much as you do. Seton Home Study School is the best way to teach your children at home. Go to setonhome.org. setonhome.org.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
We'd all love to do more to spread the gospel, but where do you start? One simple way is through the Ministry of Hospitality. People need places to experience godly fun and fellowship. Let your home be that place. Make your home the welcoming place the neighborhood kids like to hang out. Be the family that organizes the annual block party. Invite people over once a month for a meal or game night or other activity where you can build relationships and spread a little joy. Evangelization is all about creating connection and letting people experience the difference God's grace makes in our lives. By letting people experience how God's love is lived out in your family, you're sharing the gospel in a subtle but powerful way. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I said to the sisters one day, what do you think you're going to look like in heaven? Oh, some of them had absolutely magnificent ideas. I didn't think of one of them. And so I got desperate because then my turn came. I didn't know what to say. And so in desperation, I said, what do you think I'll wear in heaven? And they all said with one voice, armor!
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Pete. I'm talking with Doug Berry, husband and father of five, host of multiple popular series on EWTN TV and EWTN podcasts, currently the co-host of the podcast U.S. Grace Force. For over 30 years, he's been a Catholic speaker nationally and internationally about the Catholic faith and virtuous manhood. Doug, one of the things you brought up earlier that I want to invite you to speak boldly into as well is that in my own speaking, especially to young men and men's conferences, I've lost count how many young men have come up to me and said, the dating scene is not like it once was. And feminism has worked a number, even on Catholic women's imaginations. And so the way they think about men and dating and the expectations they have of men has become rather, for want of a better expression, anywhere from unrealistic to maybe a little corrupted. I invite you to speak to that.
Yeah, and that's I guess one of the points I was thinking about when I said earlier that there are multiple reasons why this is happening to the men, and there are multiple solutions or ways to address this. And part of this is the side of the woman. Women today, you're right, the feminization has been very destructive. Clearly this has been an attack from the enemy, but many people have willingly cooperated with this in, you know, the empowerment of women and the destruction of men. And there's a report that's even on the news I saw earlier today of so many stay-at-home husbands and boyfriends. So you've got live-in relationships, of course, cohabitation. Boyfriends are staying home. The women are the primary breadwinner. That seems to be growing in some areas. So these types of things that feminism has done has really, again, undermined and attacked the structure. There are so many men, I bump into the same type of men who come up and say, you know, I really want to find a good, holy, godly woman, but it's so hard to find that. You know, men are built to win the hearts of women, and women are built to have hearts that are winnable. I say to ladies all the time, have a winnable heart. Help the men, not just waiting around for them to burst through the door, kick through the wall, and save you from something, but show them that your heart is a heart worth winning, that you want to be that godly woman, that strong woman, that truly Marian type of woman that has an interior strength, not this outwardly bold sort of appearance that can really be misleading and not conducive to really God's design. But there's something about the interior beauty and strength of the Blessed Mother that women can wonderfully model and show the relentless pursuit of faith and strength, clinging to Jesus, and be that type of woman. Then you're going to win the men that you really want to win, and men are truly seeking, the good, holy, godly men that are trying, that's the type of woman that they want. And this is something, I have four sons, and I have two that are married and two that aren't, and I hear this from the two that aren't, is the struggle with today's feminine disposition, if you will, regarding marriage and such, is brutal, and it's a sad situation that we're in. But it's, again, something that can be corrected, and I know we can talk about that. But parents have to be involved, the church has to be involved, from different areas and different perspectives. We have to attack this and address this.
And there's a categorically objective reality that the Marxist paradigm in society has pushed forth, which is the feminization of men and the masculinization of women. And some people might say, oh, and I disagree with the framing, but it's objectively true that that is the effort, that was the push for the sake of flattening the differences between men and women. And that's had horrendous ramifications on society and marriage and the family.
It has. And they're not even hiding that anymore. That hasn't been hidden for quite a while. They came out with that, the destruction of the not just the roles, but the godly design. I mean, so much about the Bolshevik Revolution and in Russia and such that our Blessed Mother warned us about in Fatima was very clearly to undermine all of these areas that God has created society to flourish through and with. And that flattening, as you said, is an excellent way of putting it, because it does level the playing field, so to speak, and then everybody's just the same, and really, we're not. There's just no way that that's ever going to be true. Now we've come to the point where you can declare that you are the opposite sex by just stating it, and that's the way you feel, and legally that has to be accepted. This has really gotten to a point that is off the charts. I mean, you and I are old enough to know when we were younger, if this sort of thing would have been discussed, that we would hear this pronoun issue and transgender issue being so widely accepted, fought for, defended, people getting fired if they don't accept it. We would just thought, that's crazy. It's not going to get that bad. And here we sit. There's one way out of this, ultimately, and that is we have got to do what Our Lady of Fatima said, and that is turn back to her son. She says, if you do what I ask, you can alleviate these things. You can drive communism out. And we're seeing that even with, you're up in Michigan, I believe, right, Doctor? And you just had an election.
Yeah.
And we have this guy elected now who, you know, is a DSA agent type. Yep, you know, and we're seeing this across the country. And Our Lady has given us the remedy. And that's for all of these areas, from the manhood problem, the womanhood problem, the communism problem, and that is to turn back to her son, deepen our prayer. But then there's natural components too. We talk about that in the book, and I know you and I discussed it in the previous interview.
Thereby, Doug, one of the issues that you have driven yourself into in terms of your postulate, but also that you exhort in the book, Catholics have an obligation to, like you said, immerse ourselves in all of these spiritual heritages, but then to not keep it to ourselves. In many ways, we lost the culture battle because we ceded the culture grounds to other people, thinking the government, the society, maybe the culture, maybe the public schools, like they will keep holding the status quo. They didn't. We let this happen.
We did. And you know, another analogy of that, or another way of looking at that, is men have relinquished their first and foremost priority to protect and defend their families to simply calling 911. That's kind of an example of what you're saying. Someone else will take care of it. I don't have to be in shape. I don't have to have an idea how to fight, protect, defend. I don't have to keep my guard up so much. I just got to call 911 and someone will come to save me and save those under my care. And so it's another area where we have just kind of turned it over to others. And I remember the words of Pope John Paul I, who stated in his very short, I think, 33-day papacy, you only preserve the truth that you defend. And that's all these pieces as well, true manhood, true womanhood, true relationships. And it does need to be something we must, again, as you mentioned, immerse ourselves in our faith, know the teachings, understand the history of things so that we don't repeat it in the negative, destructive ways. And then we have got to engage. And the natural component of being disciplined, of being active in our communities, in the public square, as Popes John Paul II, Pope Benedict, for example, have told us, we need to get out there and do this. Now, in the article they mentioned, the Pope Leo even said something about a digital sobriety, I think was the term. We need to be teaching and preaching that as well. We've got to pull back from this excessive use of screens, social media, news, and really get back to just adoration, prayer, sacraments. Be aware of that stuff, sure. You do, I do, we follow it, we pay attention, but I don't let it consume me. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening in the study with a lot of these men, is they have allowed themselves to be so consumed by video game, over 40% play video games every day, and again, the pornography problem, and just the social media. And I think, you know, Doctor, one of the big problems with social media is we fall into unhealthy comparison. And
yes,
that may be where some of these guys are at, too. They're comparing their lives and their idea of the American dream and family and relationships with what they see in social media. And as the saying goes, the grass is always greener on the other side of the Instagram screen. And that's just a very unhealthy way to live life and to gauge your existence and your purpose in this world.
And almost 100% of the time, that green grass is just a filter. It's completely fake.
Right. You're really... It's true.
But you bring up this video game thing, Doug. You and I touched on this very briefly in the last conversation. The reason why game developers are creating games the way they are now is because it speaks to that male need for conquering and for achieving, and it satiates that need temporarily but artificially. And so you wind up creating this counterfeit of a man who mentally believes, I've achieved something, but really in reality he's achieved nothing, and he withers away into that nothing.
Yeah. That's so true. Increasing in your level of your video game, you know, level up, or what? I mean, where is that in the big picture of being able to lay my head on the pillow at night, feeling like I've really accomplished something as a man? prayer with the way God designed me to. You know, the dragons that we are supposed to slay oftentimes start within ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, concupiscence and the battles of the seven deadly sins and the attacks that we get from the world, the flesh, and the devil. But then there are those battles outside, whether it's the political world or the educational world. We've got to bring God's truth and light into all these different realms. Those are the battles. Those are the areas where we want to level up, so to speak. But the video game thing, you know, it's a game. And just like sports and some of these things, they will all pass.
Mm.
And they are all there so temporarily. And they're relatively shallow in many respects. And we can all get caught up in that stuff. But we have to be dedicated and committed to a prayer life. And men, I would say to any man listening out there and to the ladies who might be listening, to encourage the men when it comes to dealing with this issue, like we've seen in this article and this survey, we have got to be on our knees. We've got to be in those moments daily where I'm simply turning to God and saying, I need your guidance, I need your wisdom, I need your counsel, I need your direction, Lord. And then roll up your sleeves and fulfill your duties and your responsibilities. Develop your physical, personal, emotional, mental habits mm-hmm. in good ways, godly ways. I just recently had a conversation with one of my sons, and I said, you have a lot of charisma and a lot of charm that God has given you to use in this world, but remember, your character, your interior character before God is always far more important than all the other external things that you have. When that character is in the right place, it will drive all these other pieces, and it will be driven in good ways. We've got to encourage that among men. But we older guys have got to encourage the younger guys. Roll up your sleeves, toughen up for the fight, turn to God, and let's do this together.
Doug, I could go on and on with you, and I want to say thank you very much for making the time to talk with us. I've been talking with Doug Berry. Now, Doug wears many hats. He's a Catholic speaker, TV host, podcast host, and most of all, I want to highlight this book of his, First Line of Defense, The Catholic Man's Call to Heroism. It was a very easy read, very practical, applicable reality. We've been talking about the fact that the vast majority of surveyed men are showing today that they feel isolated and feel like failures. There's a remedy. It's Christ and natural law. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.